All right, ladies, buckle up.
It's showtime. It's showtime.
It's showtime.
It's showtime.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Mayonnaise Talk, our 35th episode. Today we'll be talking about Zombieland 2, and we'll talk about our top 5 zombie movies. But before we get into that, I am one of your co-hosts, Julian, and with me, as always,
Johnny Lightfoot.
Johnny, how are you doing this morning?
Doing well. We got another little cold spell come through this morning.
Finally feels so good.
Finally feels like fall, folks, with Halloween literally like a week away.
Yes. Speaking of which, have you got your, if you're doing anything for Halloween, or if you got your costume yet?
I think I'm rocking Sam again.
Okay. All right. Sounds about right. All right, cool. I am going to probably rock Miles Morales Spider-Man this year. We'll see how that goes. Hopefully my costume comes in time. If not, we'll see how that goes. But like we said, this is the 35th episode. We'll talk about Zombieland 2, and we're going to do our top 5 zombie movies. But before we get into all of that, we got some movie news to talk about and the numbers. First off, Johnny, what were the box office numbers this past weekend?
All right, with the box office, coming in at number 1 in its first weekend in release, Maleficent, Mistress of Evil, bringing in $36.9 million.
Oh, okay.
Finally dethroning number 2, Joker, bringing in another 29.2 in its third weekend, bringing its domestic total to $247 million. It's now up over $700 million worldwide.
Hopefully it hits that $800 million mark.
Out of its first 3 weeks, already up over that. So, number 3, Zombieland 2 Double Tap in its first week, bringing in $26.8 million.
No.
Hadn't made its budget yet. Number 4, The Addams Family, bringing in $16.3 million, bringing its domestic total to $57
million. Okay.
And then rounding out the top 5, Gemini Man, bringing in $8.3 million, bringing its total domestic to $36 million on a budget of $138 million. Have you seen Gemini Man?
I was going to ask you, have you seen Gemini Man? I have yet to watch it. I don't know how I feel about it. I don't know if I want to watch it.
So I went and saw it, and a buddy of mine was like, hey, okay, you saw Gemini Man. I don't want to know too much, but, you know, quick take is, I put out a hot take. Gemini Man would have been better if you did the exact same movie, but you used Jean-Claude Van Damme instead of Will Smith.
Wow.
So you had old JCVD fighting Jean-Claude Van Damme from, like, 1995. That would make up for how bad the CG is, how bad the story is.
Oh, wow.
Just how bad it is. Because if you put Jean-Claude Van Damme instead of Will Smith, who's obviously trying.
Jean-Claude Van Damme would be able to spice
it
up.
Yeah, because then it would just be like, oh, well, this is just a fun, bad movie.
Right.
But with Will Smith in there, you're like, oh, this is just a bad movie. And he's trying to make it good. Clive Owen is obviously there for a paycheck. Like, he's like playing a 90s action villain, and he's like, I created a new version. Like, it's so bad. It's terrible. I don't care what format Ang Lee thinks you need to see it in. It's not going to be good in any format. I'll leave it at that.
Wow. All right. Cool. So, looks like I can pass on Gemini Man. Well, I might give it a shot. We'll see how it goes. But I'm surprised that Zombieland 2 is that low, though. We'll talk about that in a moment. But now with that, we'll talk about DVD releases that will be coming out this week and next week. So this week of October 22nd, we have Lion King that is coming out, Bloodline that will be coming out, and Wonder Woman Bloodlines that will be coming out as highlights of the DVD releases this week. For all three, I would say wait for streaming or rent it for like maybe a 2 days thing, $4.
Yeah.
We already had our fights about Lion King. Don't have to talk about that. I've watched bits and pieces of. Well, no, actually, I watched Bloodline. And I was just like, okay. And then Wonder Woman Bloodlines. I heard that you watched it and you didn't like it as much.
I have not seen it.
Okay. And then next week for the 29th, we will have the only movie that I see that's actually entertaining that you can watch on DVD is Loose. I'm probably going to buy Blues. It was actually one of the most thought-provoking movies of this year. I didn't think it would be, but it was really well done. We didn't do a review on this, but Octavia Spencer and Kevin Harris Jr. did a phenomenal job as the leads in this film. I really enjoyed it. So if you're looking for something to watch that's different, that's thought-provoking, I would say rent it. If you've seen the movie already, you probably already know I would buy it. So I don't know. What would you put loose in terms of renting it or actually buying it?
I would put it as a rental. And I mean, I would put it as like a full price rental. Like I would do it at like a $4.99 or whatever. I don't know rewatchability. I don't know that that's there for that movie for me.
No, it's more thought-provoking. Yeah. It's like one of those movies you can watch.
I mean, it would be one where I would, and it's also not one of those movies where like if it was on TV, I would like be like, oh, I can have that playing on in the background, because it's not really a movie you can like pop in and out of. You need to be there watching it the whole time. So, I would say it's worth a full rental, but it's definitely not one of those where it's like, oh yeah, if it's on cable, check it out, because it won't have the same, especially with like commercial interruptions and stuff. It won't have the same impact.
All right, fair. Okay. Now with that, we go straight into movie news. Do you want to talk about what we all want to talk about first, or do you want to talk about something that a little bit different before we jump into what we transpired on Monday?
I mean, I'm open for different. There wasn't much different. You got something?
The only thing I have is Jared Leto is reportedly out of talks for the DCEU. You know, the past couple of weeks, he's been a little upset about the Joker movie, saying that he wanted to do his own Joker movie, and he wanted his agents to get on it on the fact that they found out that Joaquin is going to be doing his own Joker movie and things like that. Now Warner Brothers execs are reportedly saying that he is out of talks. That's the reason why he wasn't in Birds of Prey, this film. They're going to talk about him a lot, but they're not going to explain, like, say anything about him. I think it's an interesting / smart move for Warner Brothers. I do not, and I repeat, do not like Jared Leto's Joker. He's at the bottom of the barrel for me. No offense to Jared Leto. I just feel like David Ayer didn't do enough for Joker, and I feel like he tried to make him more of a gangster Joker instead of an actual Joker, in my opinion. And granted, yes, Jared, we haven't seen any of the cuts that they have cut out of your, I mean, any of your scenes that they cut out of Suicide Squad, but even with what we saw, I'm not too thrilled about this Joker, was it? So maybe they can do a new reimagining since they're trying to do a soft reboot on the DCEU. I don't know. Hopefully they can do something better.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's obvious everybody loves the Harley Quinn character, but with the success of Joker, and again, after talking about that, I think if you wanted to use him as like a spiritual founder of the Joker character, and then others take up the mantle later, kind of like they do in the comics, where, you know, apparently there's been tons of Jokers and we just didn't know it.
Yeah.
It was just a moniker type thing. But yeah, I mean, it is what it is. It's whatever. Honestly, I feel, as somebody who grew up in the 90s where people, you know, movie makers didn't care about continuity.
Yeah.
And they were like, oh, okay, the star doesn't want to be in the movie anymore, we'll just put somebody else in there. So, I mean, my whole thought process is if they want to continue doing that Joker character, they'll just probably just throw somebody else in there. Which, I mean, it wasn't a very memorable performance, so
not at all.
You literally, the only thing you'd be losing is Jared Leto's creepy eyes, because you can't really recreate that with contacts. But
nope.
I think that's really the only thing you're losing.
I agree. That's why I'm just like, whatever. Jared Leto's gone. Cool. All right, it's not something that I'm upset about. Now on to, I guess we'll talk to the meet and greet of it. So on Monday, of course, for Monday Night Football, they released the final trailer of Rise of Skywalker. they did the pre-sale tickets early weird this year where they released them, what, an hour before the trailer started? Or right before the game started?
It was an hour.
Yeah, which was weird in my opinion, but besides the point, before we get into fiascos about ticket sales and stuff like that, what did you think of the final trailer?
I mean, I thought it was fine. They showed us just enough little new tidbits, gave us no plot information whatsoever, which I figured they were going to do. Gave us a few, like I said, little snippets. I think they're leaning towards the Ben Solo redemption.
Seriously?
I think they are. I don't want it. I didn't want it, but I think they're going to do that, and that is technically going to be the end of the Skywalker bloodline if he dies.
Okay.
I do think the fact that they're showing that the Emperor's there, but they're not showing his face, means to me it's not the Emperor we know.
You think it's like a clone or an embodiment of him?
It's either a clone, a rejuvenated, like, young version, or it's his spirit inhabiting somebody else. I do think it's Matt Smith, who has been, for the last, like, 2 years, very, like, oh, I'm not in Star Wars, when everybody knows you're in the new Star Wars.
So you think Smith is going to be...
Because if you look at his, like, fake structure... The dude kind of looks like Ian McDiarmid, so I think, yeah.
Okay. And then I guess my other question is when the Star Destroyers are coming out of the Earth, do you think that's Palpatine doing that, or do you think that's just
them? Oh, no, I think that's just that's where they have them, like, stashed and ready to go, and they're just coming out
of the Earth. Okay, all right, cool. Okay. I agree with everything you just said. I just don't want to see a Ben Solo redemption arc. And I feel like that's where they're going with this. They're going to have the little whatever fight that they're going to have in front of the Death Star and stuff like that. But the way that this story has been going for 7 and 8, it just made it seem like he wasn't going to have this redemption arc. Or you push him too close to the dark side where it's going to get to the point where he won't become a good guy by the end of the film, but after watching this trailer, it just seems like that's what they're going to try to do.
Well, and I don't think, like, redemption, I don't mean, like, good.
No, not like
that. I mean, like a Darth Vader type of deal.
That's what I mean. And I just feel like they're trying to push too many heartbeats or too many dramatic scenes from the original trilogy and put this in this trilogy, which is one of my biggest gripes with this trilogy. It just seems for me that J.J. Abrams, if he does this, it just seems as if he's just trying to be a cookie cutter about it, if that makes sense. Whereas with Star Trek, right? Let's do his Star Trek trilogy. Star Trek trilogy, he did do some of the beats that was in the original films, but even at that point, he did some things that made it different. You're sitting there wondering, wow, this is a really good trilogy for Star Trek. I just feel like with this trilogy for Star Wars, it does a little too much to be too close to the original trilogy. It seems like all the films are almost carbon clones of the original trilogy. Like how Force Awakens is basically a carbon copy of Episode 4. I feel like Episode 8, The Last Jedi, was a mixture of 5 and 6 just a little bit. And I feel like 8 is going to be a mixture of 6... again, and I don't know. I kind of have my gripes about it, but again, it's just trailers. We don't know what J.J. Abrams has up his sleeve. I'm just guesstimating at this point. I'm just excited that we have Palpatine back. I'm kind of excited that they didn't show him, but as you say, I think it's an embodiment of like a clone or something that he had laid dormant for a while. I also do believe that, hot take, I think somebody from the new cast is going to die. I don't think it's going to be like Poe, Rey, or Finn, but I think it's somebody from the new cast that's like a little side character or something like that to give it some gravitas for some apparent reason. I don't know. That's just something that I'm thinking is going to happen. But other than that...
I mean, based on the trailer, it definitely looks like JJ's trying to minimize characters and stuff that Rian Johnson brought in. So yes, you only get like the one shot of Rose, Kelly Marie Tran's character. They're definitely seems to me leaning away from that relationship and more into like the triangle of the main three, Poe, right, Finn, and Rey. I gotta really disagree on the carbon copy of the original trilogy, though.
You think so?
Yeah, no. The Force Awakens pays homage in certain instances, but carbon copy, it is not. And then Rian Johnson's is the most different Star Wars movie we've ever gotten.
No, it's different, but what happened, like, for instance, the big story points in episode 8, I just feel like they just basically did the exact same thing as 5 and 6, where, okay, we're going to bring you in to go see the big Emperor guy, which we know Snoke isn't an Emperor, but it's like he's the one who's been training him, he's the one that's been glowing in smoke and all this entire time. We kill him off, and basically we destroy the big, almost not the Death Star 2.0, but basically the biggest Star Destroyer that they had with Laura Dern using it through lightspeed. And it's just, for me,
but none of that happened in 5.
Well, that's why I said it's a mixture of 5 and 6. That's why I said 5 and 6 in a little bit.
But there was also the first Star Wars movie where there was no lightsaber fight.
Not in 5? Empire
Strikes Back. No, in 8, there was no lightsaber fight.
Okay, all right.
Or duel. There was no lightsaber duel.
Not a duel, but they were using lightsabers in the film 2 times. Now, besides that, there's some other moments that I really liked. For instance, like Luke using his hologram to stop Kylo. Like, there's some moments where, like I said, I love 8 more than what other people have it. I just feel like the story beats for 7 and some of the story beats in 8 just reminds me of the original trilogy just a little bit. That's where my issue is. It's not a lot, but it's a little bit. Like, for 7, hey, they find a ship to go get them out of space. They get an old character from the original trilogy to help them through the character. That same character dies at the end after being a mentor for the new kids on the block. It just... And then you destroy the Death Star after slowing the shields down. And we don't have a big Star Wars lightsaber fight at the end. It's just a big, like, little, almost like a poking match, I felt like, with episode 7. But besides the point, that's what I mean by it has some big story moments that kind of coincides with 4. I just don't want the same thing to happen in 6. I feel like 8 kind of pushed the boundaries a little bit. Granted, there's about 1 or 2 story moments that, like I said, mends with 5 and 6. I just hope with 9 we get a complete rendition. Yes, there's a way that you can tie up everything together. I just don't want to see Ben do what Darth Vader did in Return of the Jedi, where he's like, okay, I have one change of heart, and then all of a sudden that's going to be my sacrificial part. Please, let's not do that.
Well, I think the difference is, and that's one of the reasons why, as much as people complain about the Kylo Ren character, I actually really enjoyed that character simply for the fact that they are giving him a full character arc.
Yes.
That Anakin never got.
I agree.
So the majority of what you see Darth Vader is he's big, he's bad, he's mean, and then Return of the Jedi, it's like all of a sudden, oh, he flips. This character, you're seeing him in his infantile bad ways where he still doesn't know, he's reckless, he might go good again, and then by killing his dad he thinks that that's it. And then in 8 you see he's kind of rebelling against his mentor, he wants to start his own thing, and then now we're gonna see him as the supreme leader. Like, how is that gonna go? How is the Emperor coming into it gonna, you know, affect him? Like, is that going to be a good thing, or to him is that, with his whole the past should die whole thing, is it going to be like, no, like, you Sith, they're supposed to be gone? Like, is that why him and Rey are teaming up again? Because he's like, no, Sith, they're supposed to be gone. I'm not with that, like, that whole thing.
So you think that scene with Rey and Kylo with his helmet on is an actual scene from...
Yeah, she's also holding this dagger. I'm sure it's some form of artifact.
Yes.
I'm sure that probably takes place midway through sometime in the second act.
When she's training with Luke and Yoda.
We'll see. But Enough about that. We spent a lot of time
on this Star Wars trailer.
We'll find out in 2 months.
Right, and we'll give you all the details, all the juicy review and stuff like that on that later. We're not there yet. Now we're going to talk about Zombieland 2. This is our review of Zombieland 2, not Star Wars. We're not there yet. First, before we go in too deep into spoiler territory, which, I mean, can we just do spoilers? Because I think this movie doesn't really need...
I don't even think it needs a spoiler review, to be
honest.
That's
what I was going to say. I don't think it needs it. So, to be honest with you, let's just do it. How did you feel about Zombieland 2?
I initially gave it a 3, but looking back, I mean, it's probably more like a 2.5.
You didn't like it?
No. I mean, I thought it was fine. It was fine. It's not that I didn't like it, but it's also not that I liked it. It was fine.
So, after looking back at it, I was going to say...
what I mean by spoilers is, like, there isn't really anything you can say to spoil it that will make it either a better or worse movie.
I was just going to say that.
It's forgettable. It takes the best stuff about the one that came out 10 years ago, inputs that stuff, and then doesn't really do anything new, and has a...
That's exactly my issue.
A worse third act.
So, alright. So, here's my thing. I had it at 3.5, and I'm probably going to put it at a 3 now. Not only reason. I thought it was entertaining. The jokes were funny. Some of the jokes were funny. I feel like the characters that we got were the exact same characters that we had in Zombieland. I enjoyed that part. It's just them growing up 10 years. Two things I really had an issue with is Madison.
Oh yeah, like she to me was one of the worst parts because yeah, you had that original dynamic with them, and I think you set it off right with what Wichita does in the beginning, her and Little Rock, because that's something that plays in the first one. But
yeah,
and then you bring in Madison, and she just throws a wrench in everything. Not even with what she's doing. With, I understand, like, if you wanted to have like another character come in there and kind of put Wichita and Columbus at each other a little bit and kind of divide them up.
She doesn't even do that.
But I mean, well, she does that. It's just in the most annoying way. And then you have to see, like, basically you have to see her as this idiot, Wichita has this really snotty, brash, I'm better than everybody type thing, and it makes her character less appealing because of the way she's talking to Columbus and Madison.
Okay.
Because originally, like, Wichita is this badass, and she's snarky, and she talks crap about people, but it's still endearing. Yeah. In this, when she's talking to Columbus and Madison, it just comes off as mean and petty.
Okay.
And it makes her character less likable. So Madison as a character is not likable, and she makes the characters around her less likable because she's there.
So that's what I was going to say. My thing is this. If you brought in Madison for maybe 15 minutes of the movie, how I assumed that they were going to do it, then I would get it, right? But for you to have her not only be through the entire film, but try to keep her at a sense of making not only Columbus different and him throw a wrench in between Tallahassee and Wichita, now you're making not just him that, you're making everybody that. And it didn't work, in my opinion. In the beginning, I could understand how it would work. I would understand it because she's basically trying to fill that void that where Wichita was when she decides to up and leave. Again, this is spoilers, but at this point, like, the movie is not really that different. But so, yeah, she basically is doing that. And then all of a sudden, we get her to come back for the third act, which, to be honest, she was completely useless. In the third act, she doesn't do anything specifically in the third act. And to be honest, and this is why I'm probably going to put it at a 3 again, the whole movie teases this zombie kill of the year kind of situation. And yes, I get it that the zombies are completely different and they're supposed to be T-800s now because they're supposed to be more difficult to kill. You don't even show that in the third act. You set it up so well for the third act. I'm wondering, okay, how is Wichita, Little Rock, Tallahassee, and Columbus are going to get through this? And then all of a sudden, you do what you do at the end of the film, and I'm just sitting there, okay, it was fine, wasn't great, but could have been better. And I was just frustrated. I was frustrated with the ending, but the laughs that I got throughout the movie was entertaining me enough, especially with the epilogue scene that she got with Bill Murray. Was pretty entertaining.
Oh, that was my favorite part of the movie. Right, was the Bill Murray epilogue. I did really like the explanation of, like, I almost married you. That scene was really funny. But yeah, I thought the whole thing with whatever his name was and Flagstaff, basically the
doppelgangers. Yeah,
I thought a lot of that was funny. And then after that, when it kind of flipped, I thought it was like, oh, okay, we didn't really need this. I thought it was, I mean, like I said, it was fine. I think it would be a fine watch again if it's on daytime TV and it's on and it's at a certain part, but it's just, it didn't really bring anything new that we hadn't seen. And to think that, you know, it's been 10 years since that first one, and again, you had 10 years to come up with a new story for these characters that a lot of people really liked, and this was the story, and that's where it was kind of a letdown for me.
No, I agree. It wasn't better than the first one. Everybody keeps asking me if it was better than the first one. Definitely not. It's entertaining, but it doesn't bring anything different. There's no new rules that you hear about. There's no new aspects that you hear about. It's just the same characters, and you just watch them grow up for 10 years. Okay, cool. The only thing that's really different is, spoiler alert, Columbus and Wichita, like, get engaged. Cool. And Little Rock decides that she wants to be her own person. Ooh. Like, that's the only thing that's really different with this film. And, I mean, I wouldn't even... That's the scary thing about this. I wouldn't even watch it again. I mean, I'll watch it again for certain aspects of the beginning, the first two-thirds of the movie. The final third act, again, it just... They set the situation up really well. And then, all of a sudden, just... I feel like copped out with the last kills of the zombies. And that's what kind of ruins the movie. And you can tell that they wrote themselves in a corner, but I'm still not going to give them any thought for that. So that's why I wouldn't give it a 3.5 anymore. I guess I was happy that the fact that the jokes were still there and the jokes were funny. But in terms of story-wise, it wasn't where I wanted it to be. So I'm probably going to bring it back down to a 3. But it's in the middle of the pack. It was an entertaining movie, to say the least. I was thrilled a little bit, so yeah, I'd watch it in passing. I wouldn't watch it or buy it on Blu-ray like I did with Zombieland. I'm just gonna watch it when it's on TV and say, okay, I like this part, and then turn it off on everything else. So that's how I feel about Zombieland, or that's how we both feel about Zombieland. Double tap. Now on to that. You ready to go talk about our list?
Yeah, so with Zombieland 2 just coming out and then Halloween being a week away, I know last year we did, you know, best Halloween movies, top 10. This year we're going to do top 5 zombie movies, and I guess we'll go 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 and just alternate, and we'll see if we got anything the same. If it's further away than 2 spots, we'll skip it or pin it and talk about it later.
So, complete and utter transparency. Sorry, audience. One of my specific genre of films that I really don't watch as much is zombie movies. Hot take, I really didn't like them as much as growing up because I just didn't care for zombies. Oh, zombies. Ooh, werewolves and vampire movies. Ooh, okay. So I haven't watched as many zombie movies, but I think that my list will kind of reflect how I feel about zombie movies. But with that being said, I think our list is going to be completely different this time. Also, we went blind on this, so we don't know each other's list, as Johnny just said. So I'm going to go first just because I'm, again, kind of late to the party. My first movie... Actually, can I do my my only honorable mention real quick? Because I know you probably have it on your list. Honorable mention, just because I've just seen it a year and a half ago, 2 years ago. Shaun of the Dead. That's my honorable mention. Ooh. I know. Ooh. I know. I've only saw it in passing. I hate to say it. I was intoxicated when I watched it. It was funny. It was entertaining. If I watched it again sober, I probably would have it in my top five, maybe top three. But just because I was intoxicated and watched it for the very first time with some college friends and we were just talking over it, I kind of can't give Shaun of the Dead its glory. But the moments that I remember were very funny. I love the whole idea of, you know, him basically waking up and the whole zombie epidemic is happening after he just had a big breakup. Thought it was fun. Just unfortunately, sorry guys, I haven't really watched Shaun of the Dead. That's one of the movies that I want to watch sober, so... Yeah, that's my honorable mention.
All right. My honorable mention is 2004's Dawn of the Dead from Zack Snyder.
I have that in my top five.
So I'll just say it's actually really fun. I like what he did with the zombies. I remember seeing this in college. I own it. But there's only room for one Dawn of the Dead in my top five. And so I'll leave it at that.
I haven't even seen George R. Romero's Dawn of the Dead. We're going to get into that in a moment. All right. Number five for me. Well, do you have any other honorable mention before we go?
No. All
right. Number five, World War Z. Brad Pitt's take on zombie movies. The only reason why this is top five, again, I haven't seen that many zombie movies. I enjoyed this movie a lot when it came out. I remember watching it in theaters with my cousins, and my cousins are freaking out because these zombies are so fast and so quick. And I just remember watching this and saying, wow, these zombies are a little different. Get it? The setup is not that great. The movie is very slow at times, specifically when he's in the building with a whole bunch of other survivors trying to get out. It gets slow at certain moments, but I enjoyed the different take it had on the zombies. I loved Brad Pitt's performance in it. I watch it every so often when it comes on TV because I have a fonding memory of it. Other than that, that's going to be my number five. I really digged this movie, but like I said, if I probably watched Shaun of the Dead, this probably wouldn't be in my top five.
All right. My number four is...
Wait, what's your number five?
Oh, yeah, excuse me. Yeah, number five. Number five. It's going to be Dead Alive, or it's also known as Brain Dead, by Peter Jackson. This one's just one of those fun, it's got the gore, it's got some slapstick comedy, it's got a lawnmower just chewing through bodies. It's just a really fun, you know, zombie movie from almost 20 years ago, and I remember watching this one. You know, it's like slumber parties in middle school, and it's just, I'll really dig this one. And you, like, if you watch it, you would never know that this guy, less than 10 years later, would be doing the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Yeah. Okay, that's another one that was on my list this year, because I need to watch that in another film that you probably have on your list. So, cool. Number four. It's another fun zombie movie, Planet Terror by Robert Rodriguez. I remember watching it on Starz when it had its premiere many, many years ago. My brothers and I were excited because we all were Robert Rodriguez and Quentin Tarantino fans at that time. And so we watched it, and it was just so weird and so different, but that's what made it so much fun. Specifically, I forgot the girl's name. I haven't seen the movie in years, but... The girl that becomes a stripper who has an amputated leg, who basically has a grenade launcher and a gun for it, which just, it's fun. The movie is literally just a big, glory, fun movie, gore all over the place. Quentin Tarantino, of course, has a cameo that's literally just gut disgusting, but overall, I enjoyed Planetary. I could watch that movie any given moment and just enjoy the rest of the movie. It makes no sense. It reminds me, I'll put it this way. It reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever watched it, of Mars Attacks, mm-hmm. Tim Burton's film, where it's just literally, hey, let's just see how much fun we can have in the movie. That's how I feel about Planet Terror. And because it doesn't really take itself that seriously, it's just a fun kill zombie movie. That's why I put Planet Terror up there. That's why it's my number
one. Oh, yeah. It would probably be, for me, in that, like, 6 to 9 range.
Okay.
If I was doing a top 10. Like, I own it. I remember fondly watching the Grindhouse double feature in 35mm back when it came out.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And it was Planet Terror. Then they did, like, an intermission, played a bunch of the trailer, like, the fake trailers done by, like, Eli Roth and everything. And then they did Death Proof.
Death Proof, yeah.
And, yeah, that was one of the funnest 35mm screenings I've ever been to back in the day.
Okay. Okay.
Moving on, my number 4 is a fairly recent movie, Train to Busan.
I want to watch that movie.
This is one of the most, and it takes a pretty simple premise, a guy and his daughter on a train trying to get to a safe zone, and there's these crazy fast zombies, you know, nothing like, you know, they're just like ones we've seen before with fast zombies, whether it's the 2004, which I'm trying to think if Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead was the first one to do like the crazy fast zombies.
I think it was.
Because we've had like normal moving zombies that weren't like super slow, but I don't think we had the ones that were just like okay, they're all like Usain Bolt fast. And I think that was where it started. But again, Train to Busan, you got these crazy fast zombies and you've got this confined space and it's this moving story about this guy trying to get his daughter to safety. And like the last like 15 minutes, that's what, like, I don't tear up in movies. I was legit tearing up, I would say, the first 2 or 3 times I watched this movie. Every time it got towards the end, it was not waterworks, but it was eyes were getting moist.
Water. Yeah.
So it is a moving movie, and I'm sure by now it's on streaming somewhere. I have the Blu-ray. I think
it's on Netflix right now.
I have the Blu-ray, and it's so good.
I might have to borrow that from you because I've been trying to watch Train to Busan for a while. It was on Netflix. I don't think it's on Netflix anymore. I believe it's on Amazon Prime, ? But I know it was on streaming not too recently, and I wasn't able to get to it. But yes, that's definitely one of the movies I've been wanting to watch just because it looks so much fun, and it looks very gut-wrenching. But yeah, that's one that's on my list. For number 3, I have Zombieland, actually. I have Zombieland on my number 3. Do you have it on your top 5? No? Probably not? That's what I figured. So, again, the first Zombieland does a lot of things different than any other zombie movie that I have watched. Unfortunately, there's not that many, but it basically takes the zombie franchise, I mean zombies, and turns it on its head and gives it rules and basically ways of surviving, but also basically a whole bunch of characters that you never expected to be in a movie together or survive together do something really well. And like Johnny said, the characters, even though they all come from different walks of life and they all have their unredeeming qualities of themselves, they all are likable. And that's what makes this movie so damn good. Like, you wouldn't expect Woody Harrelson, Jesse Eisenberg, and Emma Stone, all three in one movie, just having fun, it seems like. And granted, you see them having fun in Zombieland 2, but it doesn't capture the same magic as the first one. And I don't know. I enjoy Zombieland. I've recently rewatched it, not only just for the movie, but I always watch Zombieland during the Halloween season. It's phenomenal. I enjoy it a lot. I like it a lot. I'll always watch Zombieland, so that's why it's in my top 5.
All right. My number 3 is Shaun of the Dead. So, okay. By far, one of the most masterful, like, horror comedies ever. and it's the first film in Edgar Wright's, like, iconic Cornetto trilogy.
Yeah.
I mean, you have so much. Like, this was Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, like, breaking out onto the scene, and Edgar Wright, like, putting his name out there to where he could start to do some bigger budget stuff as well. And it's a perfect blend of, like I said, there's some sad moments with his parents or his stepdad and his mom, and, you know, and then again with his best friend. But it's a must watch for me, Shaun of the Dead.
That's why I feel bad that I was watching it intoxicated and I really wasn't paying attention except for big moments. So that's why I really need to give this movie a better watch. I'm definitely going to rewatch it again. Oh, so let me ask you this question. Out of Edgar Wright's trilogy, this is the best one to you?
Yeah. Speaking of Edgar Wright's trilogy, the only Mondo Prince to ever get misdelivered by the post office, my Cornetto trilogy prince.
What?
Yeah, that's those are the only ones. It's the ones that are, they're made to each one look like a 1970s horror comic book. Yeah, I got those, and they delivered them to the locker, sent the code to the wrong person, and then whoever that person was decided they weren't going to return them. So, didn't even know what they had, I'm guessing, because technically they only... They only did 100 of World's End, 150 of Hot Fuzz, and 175 of Shaun of the Dead. So technically, there could only be 100 complete trilogies, but that's not very likely. So I had probably what was fewer than 100.
So
of that trilogy.
Did they rescind some? No.
No, because they were gone.
They were gone, yeah.
So basically, the post office had to cut me a check for what I paid, but those things are worth like four times that now.
Damn.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So without going into any more details on that one, I feel like this one is going to be a hot take on everybody's. But Romero's Night of the Living Dead. That's my number two. Yeah, that's my number two. I remember watching this as a kid during Halloween on Turner Classic Movies. My mama hates horror films. But this is the only one that she really enjoyed. I mean, yeah, I would put it this way. It's a horror film, but it's not necessarily like a really Let me put it this way. It's not by the numbers zombie apocalypse movie. And that's what I really enjoyed about this movie. You have the zombies in there, but you start to realize that the real monsters are the humans in the aspect of the film. And, I mean, spoiler alert, this movie has been over 50 years old. I mean, the black guy who's the protagonist in the film dies by, like, the cops at the end of the film. And it's one of those movies where you expect it to be by the numbers zombie movie, but then when you watch it, you're just like, really? It's really thought-provoking more than it's a zombie movie, in my opinion. And I think that's why I like Night of the Living Dead so much. It's really it's really good, despite it being over 50 years old. I enjoy it. I love it. I try to watch it every year during Halloween, but the last time I watched it was in 2016 when I was in LA interning. It's a fantastic film. One of Romero's best, but unfortunately, that's not saying much because I've only seen, I think, four of his films. So for me, I mean, I like this film. I think it's one of his best, but again, it's only seen four of his films. I want to see more of them, and I bet, unfortunately, you have his... I bet you have the one that everybody says is his best one as number one. So I will watch that one. I just don't know when. But which is ironically enough for my number one. We'll get to that in a moment. But Johnny, what is your number two?
So my number two might be controversial in the fact that there are people who say they're not zombies technically. And that's 28 Days Later.
There's zombies. All right, so...
The Infected.
Right, so for that instance, I was thinking about another film that I decided not to put on here, Reanimator. Mm-hmm. It kind of was like, that's not really zombies, so I
can't I mean,
put
they, that on. They're people who were dead that are back to life.
Technicality, that's why they put Reanimator on here, but that's why it was like, whatever, but... 28 Days Later, I think it's a zombie movie. I don't care what anybody says. It's a zombie movie. I just haven't fully finished it. That's why I couldn't put it on the list. But go ahead. I'm sorry.
But yeah, this is Danny Boyle. Like, this is up near the beginning of what we get from him in the future in terms of directing. We got Cillian Murphy and Naomi Harris, Brendan Gleeson. And I take it back when I was talking about Fast Zombies and Dawn of the Dead, because 28 Days Later... Even though they're technically the infected, they're also extremely fast. And it's just the score by John Murphy is crazy. I used to listen to that CD when I would be driving between where I went to school and back home to here in Austin. And it's, God, that John Murphy score. And it would, again, be the future of what we would get from him. With like his score from Sunshine, there's still movies out there who will use the John Murphy music from Sunshine for their trailers just because it's so epic. And so yeah, 28 Days Later, again with the fast, infected, or zombies, whichever you want to call it, it's yeah. Just brutal in style. It holds no punches in terms of like who it really sets itself up for what you would get with like what people would say with The Walking Dead with like, oh, no, but no character is safe. Mm-hmm. Like you got that from the get with movies like 28 Days Later and later 28 Weeks Later where, yeah, it didn't matter if it was like the little girl and her dad, like, yeah, we'll kill them too.
So onto that notion, like I said, I have yet to really watch 28 Days Later. 28 Weeks Later, does it live up to the hype as
28 Days Later? It's really good. It's just bigger in scale. Whereas 28 Days Later, you're with like a small group.
Right.
And it also does really well in things that some movies try to do when it comes down to like, you know, end of world type situations.
Okay.
Is 28 Days Later does a really good job in the final act of putting our main characters in a situation where people you think should be the good guys or the army are now that there's no structure in the world, like they're bad guys. They're thinking about, oh yeah, we need to keep the women to like continue to make babies. And we like, that's how their minds are thinking. And this is not, you know, again, this is 28 days later after the apocalypse and people that that our main characters think are there to help them, it's not. And it's one of the best movies at hey, by the end of the movie, it's not the infected that are the enemy, it's the other humans,
just like how Night of the Living Dead is. Okay, cool. Which is pretty interesting to say. All right. Mm-hmm. Cool. All right, I need to rewatch 28 Days Later. I haven't seen it in years and only watched the bits and pieces of it, but besides the point. All right, I already know we both have this film at number one, but the problem is mine's is the remake. Mine is Zack Snyder's Dawn of the Dead.
Okay.
So, reason why Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead is my number one. Let's go back, turn the clocks to 2004. I was 10. Yeah, I was 10 at the time, and I was watching Raw at the time. USA, I remember at the end of Raw, did a very sneak peek tidbit of the first 5 minutes of Dawn of the Dead. I've never seen this before on TV before, but yeah, after the end of Raw, Monday Night Raw on WWE, you got the first 5 minutes of Dawn of the Dead. If anybody remembers this story, like if you're a wrestling fan and you remember this, then you completely know where I'm getting at. It's the first 5 minutes of the film where, you know, there's the girl who's trying to figure out what the hell is going on, and her daughter is the one who's like courageous and turns into a zombie and kills them, stuff like that. I didn't expect for a movie to go that deep into a zombie movie, specifically at 10 years old, and I didn't even know why USA was even okay for us to even see those first 5 minutes of it with the whole situation and seeing the girl get killed off in the first 5 minutes. I never thought that USA would even do that. that scared the shit out of me as a 10-year-old, because you're like, wow, even your best friend, like, even your daughter is the one that's a zombie, you know? And I just, it blew my fucking mind at that time. So going and watching the movie that summer, sneaking in with my uncles and them to go watch that movie, made it even that much better. Again, I haven't seen Romero's Dawn of the Dead, but that film itself, for me, kind of encapsulated how scary it was to be in a situation where zombies can run very quickly and get to come and kill you in that kind of aspect. That's why I said, for me, this was the first film, but you're right. Now I'm thinking back at it, 28 Days Later did it before that. But this is arguably Zack Snyder's best film to me. And it does such a phenomenal job of giving you the angst, the claustrophobicness of being in a mall with so many people and trying to figure out how the hell you're going to be in this situation. And just, he did a really great way, he did a really good job of this film. And even with the ending, when they go onto the island, it's just, this movie was so different for me, so different from all the other typical cliche zombie films that I've watched. I enjoyed it that much compared to, unfortunately, the stupid-ass Resident Evil movie franchise that we got. This was a definitely fresh out of water film for me, and I enjoy it. And to this day, it's, again, my arguably best zombie film that I've watched. Again, that's with not watching zombies. I mean, Johnny's number one zombie film that I already know what it is, and not watching Shaun of the Dead. At this very moment, Zack Snyder's remake of Dawn of the Dead, it takes that cake for me. It's a really good film. I enjoy it. I love it. I think it's Zack Snyder's best film, and that's including 300. So, yeah, that's probably why this is my number one zombie movie.
All right. My number one is George A. Romero's Dawn of the Dead. It's the only one that I have a print over there of from a special screening back in around this time of year, 2011. It was a Mondo Mystery movie back when they used to do that. You'd buy your ticket included a print. You didn't know what the movie was, right?
Yeah.
And so we got the email saying, okay, this is where you need to... And the movie wasn't always going to be at a theater either. So it was, hey, you're going to meet at 8 o'clock outside this church. And we're all like, are they going to screen Exorcist at a church? Like, is that what it is? And so we're all lined up there. And we're there for about 30 minutes. And then, all of a sudden, a couple of charter buses roll up. And we're like, oh, this is really weird. And they're like, all right, everybody get on the buses. So we get on the buses. And then we're just chilling there for another, like, 30 minutes. And we're like, what is going on? And then we're like, are they going to show us speed while we're on buses? That was my thought process. And then the buses start driving. I'm driving for like 20 minutes. And then all of a sudden I'm like, man, I don't have a clue where we're going. Because they're just taking turns. They're not using any highways, nothing. And I'm like, I don't know where we're going. And then we start slowing down and I look out. And there's no lights anywhere. It's pitch black. And I'm like, where did they take us? And then all of a sudden, there's pounding on the sides of the buses. And then all of these spotlights light up. And then we look outside the windows, and our bus is surrounded by zombies. And the bus continues to, like, inch forward as there are these bloody zombies, like, slamming their hands on the glass. And finally, the bus comes to a stop. We hear gunshots, and then a soldier runs into the bus and is like, everybody, follow me into the mall. And then we run off the bus, and then we look, and they've got all these military spotlights set up everywhere, and then there's people as soldiers, and then there's zombies, and we realize this is at near the time Highland Mall was really on its way out, and we're at Highland Mall. And so they're like, hey, everybody get to the mall. We go, we run into the mall. We get into the mall, and they're just random zombies randomly walking through the mall. And they have a giant screen set up in the middle of the mall. They got pizza and beer and everything. And George A. Romero's there. He shot a couple zombies, talked about the movie. But this is his his opus. This is his best one, not just in terms of the gore and the humor, which the gore was revolutionary at the time, and the humor, and it was a big social commentary, and it's still to this day just holds up as in my opinion the best zombie movie ever made. And you know, there are other movies that have better gore effects, have better acting, better special effects, but this is the one that it's like, that's a classic, and there's a reason, like, once you see it, like, it, you can watch it over and over and over again. And then every time I look at that print and there's certain zombie faces in there, and I'm like, oh, that's the priest zombie that gets slashed in the head, or, you know, there's that zombie, he killed so-and-so in the mall, and then he died this way. Like, there's so many memorable zombie on human kills and human on zombie kills, and it was really a continuation of that social commentary. He started with Night of the Living Dead but couldn't really put it out there because he was still, you know, on a low budget, didn't get a mass release. But with Dawn of the Dead, he could really put it out there, his feelings on society and the way the upper class is. And I'd wonder if a film like this came out now, how our politicians would feel about it. Because obviously most of them probably haven't even watched this film, so they don't really care.
And that's why I'm upset that I've yet to watch the original Romero's Dawn of the Dead, because I've heard so many great things about it. The only thing is, I'm going to probably just have to get up and like rent it, or actually buy it on Blu-ray at one point, because so many people have told me, and again, this isn't, unfortunately, again, this is just me being naive, and I haven't watched as many zombie movies. I haven't really watched a zombie movie besides Night of the Living Dead and the remake that just blew my socks off. And I just want to be able to watch a zombie movie that will do that. And everybody keeps telling me it's Romero's Dawn of the Dead. And I want to get to it, but I don't know where to find it. It's never on streaming. It never is. So I'm just trying to figure out, how am I going to be able to watch it? So I'm just probably going to just bite the bullet this year, buy it on Blu-ray. It's not even on 4K remastered yet. I hope one day somebody does it. But I need to watch it and basically see if it's going to be the best one. I need to do that and rewatch Shaun of the Dead. So I figured that would be your number one. I assumed it would have been your number one. Other than that, yeah, it's weird that we both have Dawn of the Dead as number one, but I have the 2004 version, you have the 78 version. Mm-hmm. But besides the point, is there anything else you wanted to cap off before we head out of here today, Johnny?
That's it. That's it.
So, guys, I know that everybody's going to be enjoying Halloween this upcoming week. So please enjoy Halloween. We'll be back in 2 weeks. No, Dr. Sleep won't be here by the time we get back.
Terminator will.
Dark Fate will be. You are absolutely right. I low-key think this is one of the most underrated anticipated movies of this year, just because I hope it's as good as the originals, but I
based
don't
think based on the reactions I've seen, best since Terminator 2.
That's promising. Unfortunately, that's not a lot, but that's very promising. Okay, right. So when we come back, we'll definitely talk about Terminator Dark Fate. So without further ado, guys, thank you for joining us. Johnny, before we head out, where can the kids find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at JohnnyTheWonder and on Letterboxd at JohnnyBoyWonder.
And you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at KingJulianOwens. Thank you for joining us this day, guys. I hope you all enjoy your Halloween, and we'll see you guys next time.
Later.